The following day, I was introduced to the council representing the U.S. Navy. Clitheroe was a lordly man from Washington with a fine aristocratic beak and silver hair falling to his shoulders, who talked to the air a yard above my head. To hear him, the business would be over in a couple of hours at most. He talked briskly for a moment or two about my decisive corroboration, then consigned me to his junior, a quiet, dark little fellow called Dunn, who took me into a side room, instructing my escort to wait while he had a private word with me. Now, what followed is gospel true, and if it runs counter to your notions of how justice is done in the civilized world, I can't help it. Dunn begged to be excused for a moment and went out, and in comes a prodigious fat man with a round face and spectacles, for all the world like some Friar Tuck in a high collar. He beamed at me.
"Mr. Comber, delighted to meet you, sir. My name is Anderson, Marcellus Anderson, sir, very much at your service. I represent the defendants in the case in which you are to be a distinguished witness."
My jaw must have dropped, for he gave a fat man's chuckle and slid into a chair.
"Have no fears, sir. I shall not detain you above a moment. The Admirable Clitheroe and your watchdog, Captain Bailey, would grudge me even that, no doubt, but Mr. Dunn is a safe man, sir."
He regarded me happily over his spectacles, Mr. Pickwick as ever was.
"Now, very briefly, Mr. Comber, when we heard you were to testify, my client, Captain Spring, was mystified. However, when a description of you was conveyed to my client, why, sir, a great light dawned upon him. Oh, he was thunderstruck. I needn't go into distressing detail about what he said, but he understood your position, and the steps you had taken to safeguard yourself when the Balliol College was arrested some months ago."
He regarded me benignly.
"Now, it was Captain Spring's first instinct to denounce you the moment you took the stand. However, sir, it occurred to me there might be advantage to my client in having Lieutenant Comber as a witness for the plaintiff, if his evidence was, inconclusive. It might do the defendant more good than harm. Do you take me, sir?"
I took him all right.
"It amounts to this, sir. If my client is cleared, as I feel bound to tell you I believe he will be, for we have more shots in our locker than friend Clitheroe dreams of, then we have no interest in directing attention to the antecedents of Lieutenant Comber. If Captain Spring is not cleared," he shook his head solemnly, "then when the crew of the Balliol College are arraigned for slave trading, their number will be greater by one than it is at present."
He stood up.
"Now, sir, when we meet again at the hearing, it will be as strangers. Until then, I have the honor to bid you a very good day."
He beamed at me again. Then he was away, and two shakes later, Dunn was back, aloof and businesslike, describing to me the procedure of an adjudication court. Well, I've been in some fearful dilemmas, but this beat everything. If I gave my evidence, Spring would cut me down in open court. If I lied myself hoarse, the Navy, by God, what would they do to me? The tangle was so terrible I couldn't think straight. There aren't many blank periods in my memory, but the rest of that terrible day is one. I cannot remember the night that followed, but I recall that on the next morning a strange recklessness had come over me. I was beyond caring. I would bristle up the courage of the cornered rat, put on a bold front, and bluff, shift, and lie for my neck. And with these thoughts in my head and a freezing void in my bowels, I was escorted to the adjudication court.